I'm very pleased to have Arnold Randall in the studio, who is the chair of Chicago Wilderness, but more important, and he even knows how to turn on his own microphone. I'm impressed. You've done this before.
She just told me how to do it.
Oh, Lisa sort of
gave him a little tutorial.
Yes.
So if you need to cough, you just go, and you just turn that thing off. See, everybody, they've got their own. Of course, I can turn off any of your mics here anytime I want.
Well, you do have supreme power over there.
Yes, I do.
And we know.
I am a generalissimo supremo here. Arnold is also the general superintendent for the Forest Preserve District of Cook County, the man of many hats.
Yes, I am.
And I would say that being chair of Chicago Wilderness is a pretty big deal as it is, let alone being the general superintendent. So you're a busy guy, aren't you?
I am. And thanks for having me here this morning. And I am a busy guy. running the forest preserves here in Cook County is a major undertaking, but I'm, you know, very excited about it.
And we will get to that.
Yes.
I think, you know, the task at hand is to talk about the Chicago Wilderness Congress.
Absolutely.
And once we get out of that way, then we can get into forest preserve issues, but you'd be happy to know that the woman on your left has already signed up. She's got her ticket.
I heard that.
In her registration.
I was listening to your show earlier.
I'm really looking forward to it.
It's going to be fun.
And a number of great issues are going to be discussed, some of which I've already talked on my show in the past, including Leave No Child Inside. You've got a greening infrastructure track. And the other thing is that the things like 8-8 or 9-8 at 7-P, you're just cramming a lot of stuff into one day. And for folks who are interested, it's going to be at the Forum.
UIC Forum.
Yeah, UIC Forum at the University of Illinois at Chicago, 725 West Roosevelt Road. Do you know, can people sign up day of?
They can. I would recommend that you do it before then because there's an additional fee for signing up the day of, but you can walk in and still do it. But you can do it online right now if you want to at the chicagowilderness.org website.
You see, and then they warned me that you had to do it early. But that's okay. That's what conferences do. They want you to – they need to know, too.
You know how many people are coming.
Absolutely. It's so difficult to do that.
Well, plus the track looks incredibly detailed, and so I can imagine that the logistics behind this are pretty involved. I mean, you pick one of five. Is that correct?
Major
curriculums.
Tracks. That's right. And
do you have to stick in that, or can you float from track to track?
I'm sure people will be floating from track to track. But, obviously, if you're interested in a specific area, like Leave No Child Inside, then there's, you know, you may want to stick with that the whole day.
In fact, Sarah, that's the one that you're kind of interested in, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's a great initiative, Leave No Child Inside.
You know, so this is a big deal. Chicago Wilderness has four major initiatives. Leave No Child Inside is one of them. And in Chicago and any major metropolitan area, what we found is that their young people in particular are just not engaged in nature. And I'm a lifelong Chicagoan. And when I came into the role as general superintendent of forest preserves, I recognized in talking to people who live in a city like me just had no sort of contact or understanding in general about nature, and that really extends to young people as well. So this has been a focus for Chicago Wilderness for a number of years. We recognize that there's a quality of life issue for young people and for families who are not, you know, engaged in nature. And frankly, there's whole generations of folks are missing the boat on this. And these are future environmentalists and people who would be supporters of what, you know, nature is about and protecting our nature, but they're not engaged. They don't know what's going on. And so this is a major focus for Chicago Wilderness. And Chicago Wilderness, if you don't know, is 260 different organizations.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up because I'm sure people hear the phrase Chicago Wilderness and they go,
What is that?
Right. Yeah.
So it's 260 different organizations. There are landholders like the Forest Preserve Districts, but, you know, all the local ones in the county areas around us. But it's also, you know, the Department of Natural Resources. It's Audubon Society. It's Open Lands. Any environmental group that you can think of is probably a member of Chicago Wilderness.
Well, and not just organizations, those organizations, environmental organizations, but when you have 260 different organizations, you have a lot of different people involved. And as a matter of fact, I wanted to, go to the members because you've got associations and clubs.
Yep.
You've got coalitions.
That's
like
right.
you know, the Barrington Area Conservation Trust, the Northwest Indiana Forum Foundation, the Waukegan Harbor Citizens Advisory Group.
Right.
And the idea that it spreads over several states. And then conservation organizations, which you would expect, like Audubon and Bird Conservation Network and the Conservation Foundation and on and on and on. But then you also have the corporate
yes.
end of things.
And so you have folks who are in that world who do work in the environmental world, but you also have, you know,
ComEd is part of that. Nicor Gas.
That's right.
But yeah, and then alongside people like WRD Environmental and PISO and Associates.
That's correct.
And then county organizations. I know we're making a lot of this, but just to give you a sense of the spread of Chicago wilderness, DuPage County Stormwater Management Division, Lake County Forest Preserves, McHenry County Conservation District. Then you have cultural
yes.
and educational organizations like College of DuPage, the Field Museum, Lake Forest College, the Morton Arboretum. University of Illinois at Chicago. And then it goes on there. Faith-based groups,
yes.
Faith in Place, which is a wonderful organization
mm-hmm.
that I've worked with on this show, and they do terrific stuff. Their winter farmers markets are about to start. Foundations, friends groups, wow, municipalities, park districts.
Covers True. The whole gamut. I mean,
yeah.
and that what that says is that, you know, our environment obviously impacts everybody. And these organizations recognize that they have a role to play, whether it's what they do all the time or if it's some part of their mission. And so when this started back in 1996, there were 34 organizations, and it's grown to over 260 in the 15, 16 years now that we've been around. So it's been pretty impressive to watch the growth.
It is. Yeah. It has been. And you guys continue to grow. So with that in mind, you decide to have a Congress. Now, tell me, is this an annual event or
yes.
less than that?
Yeah, it's an annual event. This is actually every 2 years we do Congress.
Okay.
So it's not every year.
Biannual.
Sure. And this is a chance for us to get all those folks together, but really open it up to the larger public. And again, the larger mission, and we're talking about not just Chicago, it says Chicago Wilderness, but it's really Northwest Indiana, the Chicago region, and up into Wisconsin as well. Because,
yeah.
you know, watersheds and you know, the environment don't really know political boundaries. So this is really about what makes sense for the region. And so we're all connected, and we have a lot of folks from all those different areas. And it's a chance to focus on our environment, quality of life issues for people, protecting our lands and water. How do you get people better connected? And that is a huge issue. You would think, it seems like more people are aware of their environment now, but they're less connected in some ways because of technology, and they sort of gotten away from it. So it's a chance to really get out there firsthand, listen to ways to get involved. There's a lot of opportunity to discuss and meet speakers and really network with other people who are in this world.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be a pretty exciting time for people. We have a wonderful keynote speaker who's from Los Angeles. His name is Juan Martinez, and he's the Director of Leadership Development for Children and Nature Network. And it spearheads this Natural Leaders Network. And so Juan does, he's a younger professional, has done a lot of work with inner city youth out in Los Angeles and really connected them to nature out in Los Angeles. And he's really sort of this Pied Piper of young people and getting them into nature. And so we're excited to have him be a speaker for us on Thursday at the, he's our keynote speaker actually.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it's interesting that you go to the Leave No Child Inside and the whole idea that and even me, you know, I grew up in the suburbs
mm-hmm.
of Detroit. And
did my wife, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where?
All the names sound the same to me, so I can't tell you. I just know the suburbs of Detroit. And she'll
I'm going to call your wife.
No, she's listening. She'll
okay.
give me the business.
Call in 773-763-9278. Tell me which suburb you are. Wherever in
right.
the Detroit area. But the point being that even in my generation, I wasn't particularly connected to nature, except mm-hmm. that my parents opened the door at 8 a.m., let us out, and
right.
and then you come home and the streetlights go on.
That's right.
But that being said, we managed to discover nature in the suburban setting before everything got paved over. We talked about this several weeks ago. I forget under in what context, about how at that time you could find a pond and tadpoles.
That's correct.
And frogs and not fish so much there, but in my neck of the woods. But just the nature, you know, I can remember going down the block and an empty lot, and then you just dig.
Right.
You know, I was always digging for dinosaur bones in my neighborhood.
Did you ever find any?
No. I did not.
Right.
Not in Madison Heights, Michigan. You were, you were not going to find dinosaur bones in Madison Heights, Michigan. I think it's gotten worse.
What's happened is that we've had, you know, just massive expansion and subdivisions and more and more people. You know, the population growth in this country continues to grow. More and more people move to urban and suburban areas. So that growth has continued, even if it's slowed a little bit in recent years. But there's a clear trend there. And so things that used to be open fields are now subdivisions or, you know, strip malls or whatever. And this makes this more important, this work that we're doing to protect nature and to get people engaged, because they're not going to experience it. And if they don't experience it, then they're less likely to want to protect it. They don't understand the value of it.
And you see some people working on that in the city. I think particularly of Michael Howard.
Yeah, Eden Place.
In Eden Place on the south side at Fuller Park.
Right.
And what a wonderful idea he had. It was a toxic dump. Basically,
right.
He just got sick of, I mean, figuratively, of watching the guys come at night and dump.
Fly dump, right?
Yeah.
Across
the street. And he said, this is going to stop.
That's
and
right.
Not only is it going to stop, we're going to transform this space. And not just to a garden, but to a natural area in an urban area.
That's correct. And it's phenomenal if you haven't been there. It sounds like you have been there. You've got this place in the middle of the city in the Bronzeville community, Fuller Park, and he's created a space where it's not just a garden, which are wonderful, but it's a space where people come and work and learn. There's programming that happens there. The day that I visited him this summer, it was full of kids in classes. It was also full of people working and volunteering. And he's got grand plans for expansion of it. And so that type of thing where those kids would not otherwise experience nature, they're experiencing it with Michael Howard.
And that's sort of the idea with Leave No Child Inside, I would assume. The other thing I'm going to get to, one of the tracks is greening infrastructure. And you kind of start with the Millennium Reserve in the Calumet Core. That's an interesting development and a program, finally people are beginning to recognize that area has unique attributes that need to be preserved and restored. You know, it has been degraded to a great extent. And it's interesting that no sooner did we have the announcement that the state is going to be putting millions of dollars into this and try to develop the Calumet Core. And the Millennium Reserve in itself is a huge swath.
It's a huge section of the south side of the Chicago south suburbs. So it's much bigger than even the Calumet Core.
Right. Yeah. The Calumet Core is where you kind of where they're going to start and then spread out.
Right.
But no sooner did the money, was there an announcement that there was money, but the pressure got put on right away. Oh, we're going to build a gun shooting range there.
Right.
You know, and I know it's controversial, and I know you're a political guy. I don't want to get you too involved.
Right.
But, you know, but the point I'm making is the pressure seems always on there. It's not one of those areas that people are, except for the folks who live down there, it's not one of those areas that you look at and say, oh, this is wonderful. We need to preserve this. It's like it seems to be the place that everybody wants to dump something and to put their garbage and put their waste and put their coal plants. And it's about time that we rescued it, I think.
Right. Well, it's been a work in progress for many years. And I'm a Southsider and used to drive through that area with, you know, even as a kid with my parents, and the smell was horrible. And so there's been improvement over time. And there are people out there like Vic Crivello who've been fighting this fight. Marion Burns, who's deceased now, have been fighting this fight for decades. And you're finally seeing some positive attention. You know, Governor Quinn, to his credit, you know, even as lieutenant governor, was very interested in this area and brought some attention to it. And I think that's the genesis of this larger designation. But there's a lot that's been happening. Forest Preserve, we've been buying property out there. We recently acquired property, you know, from from waste management. So, you know, there's a lot, and you're right. The ecology
that says something though, when you're getting your property from waste management.
That's right. Yeah. that says what the use was. And
yeah.
I agree, but part of the mission is here to acquire it and get it back into a natural state that is, you know, that is going to support, you know, the ecology and the wildlife down there. And so it's improving. I think it's great that we have additional focus from the state, and it gives it, you know, some real goals to strive for. And, you know, we're owners down there. The Park District's owners down there. The MWRD, Metropolitan Water Reclamation District, are owners down there. So there are a lot of owners who want to see things happen down there. And we, frankly, are investing money to make it happen.
We're talking to Arnold Randall, who's chair of Chicago Wilderness and also general superintendent for the Forest Preserve District of Cook County. Ladies, if you've got anything, I mean, I would tell people that you should go to the website, ChicagoWilderness.org, if you want to see what the Congress has to offer. I don't, because I want to kind of segue over to the forest preserves.
Right. But I would just say that, you know, if you can get there on Thursday, it's an it looks like it is an action packed, just, I think you will be mentally exhausted by the end of the day, because the level of speakers that they have attracted, no wonder this thing is every 2 years, because I cannot imagine what it must take to attract. I mean, they have some of the best speakers list that I've seen, and just a wealth of knowledge across multi-disciplines to really get folks educated and aware. And I believe, too, Arnold, that there will be kids involved in the event, too.
Yes, so there are young people. There's, you know, several programs that are kid-focused. And on Friday, actually, our keynote speaker, Juan Martinez, will be coming out to the Forest Preserves, actually, to work with some of our teens in our teen programs.
So some hands-on time.
Hands-on time. We want to learn from him. We want to learn what he's doing out in Los Angeles that can be replicated here in Chicago.
What I'd like to mention is that the Wilderness program offers a registration for students and young people who have graduated within 3 years. It's incredibly affordable. For only $20, you can attend the entire day. And what's even better is that they're going to pair young people with a mentor in your specific discipline. So pre-register, it's only $20. It includes breakfast, lunch, access to all of the sessions, and then they're going to pair you with a mentor.
That's correct. Right.
And then
which
I think
is fantastic.
Yeah. That is a great idea.
Yeah.
No, that's a good point. Thank you for raising
that.
So
it's accessible to everyone.
It is. Yeah, and this is sort of God's work here. This is really important that we make these connections for young people.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. And again, you can find all that information on my website. You can go to mikenovak.net/thisweek. All the links are there, including the links to the various tracks that you can attend. But you can also go to chicagowilderness.org and find the information there. Let's move to the Forest Preserve District of Cook County. I would say that things have changed in the past couple of years.
We like to think so.
It sure looks that way, you know. You know, you've done some in terms of those changes. You've done a desk audit, resulting in HR improvements.
Well, it's more than that. Yeah, I mean, the desk audit really was a comprehensive look at the whole organization, and so HR, human resources.
Why don't you explain what a desk audit is?
It's just really a self assessment of your organization, looking at how you operate, including how you hire people. And historically in Cook County, that wasn't done the right way.
Is it about Cook County anyway?
Yeah.
I don't know. I have to say I'm encouraged in the last couple of years. It just seems like, you know, you guys, like the adults entered the room finally.
Yeah, I've heard that phrase used before, and I agree. And, you know, it starts at the top, Mike. It starts with Tony Preckwinkel. And so Tony is the county board president, but just as important to me, or more important to me, she's the president of the Forest Preserve Board, which is a separate board. Made up of a lot of the same commissioners, but it has its own separate meetings and separate business. And so Tony asked myself and Mary Lariah, Deputy General Superintendent, to come on board almost 2 years ago. Now we're in December 15th is when we took office, and said, look, you've got to clean this up. Here's what my expectations are. You know, this is about good government. This is about cleaning up government, transparency, showing what you're really doing, and talking to people. And so my experience before coming to the Forest Preserves, I did work in government, both in the planning department for the city and the Park District for a number of years in Chicago, but also was at the University of Chicago more recently in the Office of Civic Engagement. So working with the public is a big part of what my expectation is and for this organization. So we're doing that. And so the desk audit was 113 recommendations of things that we needed to fix, some big, some small. And we've been working through that. We actually post our findings. We do quarterly updates on how we're doing with those the results of fixing those things. And there's, you know, a lot of work. But, you know, things as basic as giving evaluations to employees had not happened, at least in the last 20 years. That's fascinating. But how do you...
It is fascinating and terrifying.
And terrifying at the same time. How do you know if you're doing a good job if you never have a formal review with your supervisor? And how does the employee know? How does the supervisor, you know, give good direction if they're not doing those kind of things? So things like that that are really basic to, you know, changing our technology. You know, when I walked in my office for the first time, there was no computer and there was a pager sitting on a desk. So that wasn't enough to run a Forest Preserve district.
Wow.
And I'm not making it up. That's what it was. And so that was sort of, that was representative of the type of mentality we had about
And technology. Al Gore had come in and changed all the keys on the typewriters
that's
too, right?
Yeah. Now you see I have an iPad now, so that's why I'm obviously using technology.
I noticed that. Yeah. You got your little cheat iPad there.
I do.
Yeah.
I need that.
No, that's okay. Yeah. That's fine. But among other good things, land acquisition is actually happening.
A lot of it is. We actually just went earlier this year. We refinanced some of our bonds, some of our debt, and we actually issued some new bonds without raising taxes. But $27 million of that money that we got through bonds is going through for land acquisition. And we just closed on some property a few weeks ago, about a month ago in Orland, 160 acres adjacent.
Right, Orland Grassland South.
South, right. Yeah, so we own close to 1,000 there already, and we picked up another 160 acres.
Which is, and I've talked about this before, and, you know, Benjamin Cox is a friend of mine, mm-hmm. Friends of the Forest Preserves. I love having him on the show because he just hammers it, you know, and those were dark days when under the old regime and just the degradation of the forest preserves seemed to continue unabated. Yeah. And now it's turning the Titanic around because there's so much that needs to be done. I mean, ecological restoration is high on the list. And, the estimate is that 80% of the 68,000 acres are in desperate need of ecological restoration.
There's a lot that needs to be done. The good news is there's a lot of work going on, and some of it is our own money, our own staff. We have a staff that does that type of work. We also have contractors to do the work, and we also have hundreds and hundreds of volunteers like Benjamin Cox and others who come out every day of the year and do restoration work for us, and we work with them to accomplish that, and that's everything.
But you know, you can't put it all on the volunteers.
No,
it has
we can't.
You know, it's one of those things. It's got to be a top-down kind of thing.
It does. And you know, increasing, and then Benjamin and I and others, you know, are having regular conversations about how to exponentially increase that. Now, we have increased in a significant way what we've done in the last couple of years, and we've spent more money. We've actually been more productive with our own staff. We've increased the number of staff who actually do that type of work. And we still think there's ways to continue to grow that use or that function within the district. But, you know, 68,000 acres is nothing to sneeze at. It's 11% of the county footprint. It's big.
But the point is also that 68,000 acres is a lot. We could use more. We have to get those acres because they're becoming more and more fragmented. And now is the time to do it before they're gone forever.
We agree, and this is a great market to buy. And we've been aggressive.
That's true. I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, with the depressed economy,
we've been very aggressive about it. We redid our land acquisition plan, which hadn't been done since 1994. So we've got a set of priorities and how we evaluate land. We have a list, which I can't share because we don't want to drive up the cost when we buy them. But so we're looking all around the county.
You can tell me after the show.
I'll tell you afterwards. Yeah, off the mic. But the reality is that we have a list, and we're aggressively going after properties right now. And we, as I said, we're putting, you know, $27 million in addition to what we already had set aside for land acquisition into land acquisition.
There is some controversy about how the forest preserves will be used, mm-hmm. you know, because the idea of those preserves is to keep the natural state, and yet I know that there are multi-uses. Picnics, of course, are a big deal.
Yeah.
But the intrusion of other things, perhaps like, you know, zip lines, paintball, that sort of thing has Ecologist knickers in a twist.
Sure. Well, we're not doing paintball. I can tell you that zip lines, you know, yet to be determined. We're in the process of doing a recreation master plan. And this is a conversation that's been going on for the almost 100 years the Forest Reserve's been in place. You know, if you go back and look at our archives, and you can do that online, at UIC has our archives, you can see that there's been discussion about this, about what's appropriate recreation and what's not appropriate recreation for the almost 100 years we've been in existence. Our position is we don't want to be a park district. That's not our role. It's not in our mission. But recreation is part of our mission, and finding appropriate recreation that is compatible with the lands that we hold are important. So obviously people do things like canoe and hike and bike and kayak and, cross-country ski and all those kind of things all the time. We wanted to look at, are those enough? Can we do other things? And the whole point on the recreation piece is to get new users in some cases for the first time, or get people to come back because they just are not participating at the level that we think they should. And frankly, if we don't have enough people participating, you don't have enough advocates, and frankly, your lands become endangered if you don't have enough people advocating for you.
Well, that is a good point. You want people to participate. And again, like I said, it's attention
right
there, and you have to have the right balance.
Right. So we recognize, and, you know, Benjamin and others, we have regular conversations, and the process has been very public. So when you have public planning processes, everything gets thrown on the wall and you see what sticks and what makes sense. And we feel confident that when we come back with a final plan in the first quarter of next year, that it'll be reflective of the things that people are comfortable with.
That's Arnold Randall wearing the general superintendent hat.
Yes.
Right now for the Forest Preserve District of Cook County. We got some phone calls, so leave those headsets on. Let us go to line two and bring in Benjamin. This wouldn't be Benjamin Cox, would it?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. How are you? He is the executive director of Friends of the Forest Preserves. Always great to have you on the show, Benjamin.
Yeah, I just wanted to call and give a little credit where credit's due to the superintendent and President Preckwinkle, and make sure that, you know, Friends isn't depicted as just the organization that hammers, even though I appreciate that, you saying that about us. But we do also try and help, and we've really tried to help them and make sure that they're pointed in the right direction. We think things are going well, and we're trying to keep it focused and make sure that, you know, as you were just talking about recreation, and, you know, we want to make sure it doesn't get too sideways, and I think we're going to get there because this administration is really good to work with.
Thank you, Benjamin.
Did you just say an administration was good to work with?
We were out for two late-night meetings just recently with the superintendent where we were really working through some pretty sticky issues that could either, myself and Justin Pepper from Audubon, things could really go sideways if we don't get on top of it and make sure that it's handled the right way. And the superintendent, you know, was there, and, you know, at one point he had to run out because he had to pick up his 3-year-old, and I get that. I've got two kids, but, you know, he was sure to meet with us just a couple of days later.
Yeah.
So
I appreciate you being understanding.
And I'm sorry if I gave the impression that the Friends of the Forest Preserves is an adversarial group, because they're not.
Not at all. To give credit to Benjamin, they very much want to. They're focused on the ultimate goal of, you know, enhancing these lands, getting them back to where they need to be, and making sure that people appreciate them and use them. And so we're both on the same page here. That's why I'm confident we'll be able to work together.
Mike, it's key for us to be that group when we need to be. But, you know, as a friends group, we also really try to be the best friend. So the best friend is the guy that's going to pull you in tight and tell you when you're doing good things, and then give you that kick in the rear when you're doing things not great.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but just for your own best interest, you know. And we just changed our mission to include the word promote, which is promote the use, promote recreation, promote the importance of the forest preserves. And I think that's a key reflection for us, because before it was preserve, protect, restore, and now we dropped the preserve and added promote, because we figured we do want to, like the Forest Preserve, we agree, and we do want to get more people out there who are using them and loving them and understanding them.
Well, I've got you on the line there, Benjamin. Don't you have some initiatives coming up that you want to promote?
some initiatives?
No? Okay.
I mean, we've got some various events and things coming up. I'm not sure exactly which one you're talking about.
You know, I'm not sure I am either.
All right, good.
I just see, so you know,
the thing we're working on right now is that we're working with on some committees with the Forest Preserve. It's really great to sit at the table with them. on the Recreation Master Plan, Campground Master Plan, and also we've just recently participated in some centennial planning, which is really exciting. The 100-year anniversary, or it's going to be anniversaries because there were a lot of significant dates 100 years ago for the Forest Preserve, is coming up, and we're excited to set a new standard, a new direction, and to ensure that the Forest Preserves, or help set them with the Forest Preserve, but for the Forest Preserves for the next 100 years, because, you know, our old board chair used to say on a regular basis, you know, once you save it, you have to continue to save it or it'll be gone. And we firmly believe that, too. So people start to take these things for granted if you're not careful.
Yeah. And that's what I meant. That's what I was talking about, Benjamin. There we go. All right. Listen, always a pleasure to talk to you. You're going to be on the show soon, and we'll go into some of this further.
I'll call in when Benjamin's on.
Yeah, do that.
That sounds great. Talk to you later. Have a great Sunday, Benjamin.
All right, bye-bye.
773-763-9278. Before I get to Chris in Palatine, Arnold, Benjamin brought up a great thing, which is the 100-year anniversary.
Yes. So we're really excited. This is, you know, a once-in-a-100-year opportunity, obviously, by definition. So there are three kind of key dates, 1913, 14, and 15, where things happened. 1915 was the date that our Forest Preserve commissioners met for the first time, so that's kind of the major date. But the others, two other things as well that we want to recognize. But we want to have a 3-year sort of ramp up in recognizing the Forest Preserves. And we want to really do some projects that roll out, you know. So Benjamin referenced the Campground Master Plan. You know, we want to build out some campgrounds and we see camping as a major way for people, urban folks, to get involved in the Forest Preserves. And frankly, they're not going to drive to Michigan, Wisconsin, or even Starved Rock to go camping, but they might come to the Forest Preserves. We make it accessible for them. We're going to create programs around that. We're going to have some special events, obviously, and some celebrations. But we want to have a plan that sort of looks out for the next 100 years and sort of a larger focus on what we want to be in 100 years.
Yeah, because this was the very first Forest Preserve district in the world?
Yes,
the country.
The country.
The country, at least.
And it's the largest still.
And that took the kind of vision we don't see anymore, really. And it would be nice if you could, you know, approach that and look at it in those terms. And I'm sure you're trying to do that.
We are going to do that. And that's why we're having focus groups that include, you know, our key stakeholders and friends groups to really think about what that looks like as we get there.
Let's go to the phones. And Chris in Palatine, you're on the phone with Arnold Randall from the Forest Preserve District of Cook County. Good morning.
Good morning. I can't believe we're going from 60 down to 20, so oh well. I love Chicago.
Don't remind me.
Yeah. Yes. Temperature. He's talking temperature.
Okay.
You know, Mr. Randall, I have to live across the street from the Deer Grove West Forest Preserve, so
yes.
I'm in there, you know, almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one question. You have a section of it that has been taken over by the federal government that you've got a chain fence around and totally locked up. Is that ever going to be accessible to us?
You know, I'm trying to think of what space that you're referring to. I know that we out there, that's one of our major sites where we have a lot of volunteer work. What is it? If you give me a little more detail, or
I think it's if you're at all familiar with the old paved road that I think was the original access road to Deer Grove West, and now it's just a paved bike path, a walking path, and when you go across that little stream that you have there, you have a section that has been basically taken over, I think, from the EPA, and it goes all the way back from that section up through. You know, up by where the toboggan slides are,
mm-hmm.
or where we're, and that whole area has been like chain fenced off for about 10 or 12 years.
You know, I'll be glad to take a look at that. I don't know that the federal government has a role in that. There may be some work that needs to happen there.
I talked to one of your superintendents that said that actually the EPA or anyways, the federal government has taken it over, and now it's not even under the jurisdiction of the Forest Preserve.
Okay. Well, if you want to give me a call and give my office a call, I'd be glad to look into it further.
Okay. And the other thing is that coming up, you know, and I certainly see the people out there every other week, you know, in Deer Grove West.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like almost like trying to empty the ocean with a teaspoon with all of the buckthorn and things. I just want to know if you had any plans at all to really, you know, get a major crew in there, you know, and you know, clear out all that crap.
Well, it is a major undertaking. That's an area actually we have a lot of different things going on. So we have the volunteers who are doing work up there, which we're appreciative of, but we also have contractors that are doing work as well as our own staff. But I, you know, the reality is that this work will take decades to do for the district. This is an ongoing process. It's not going to be, it didn't get that way overnight, and it's certainly not going to end overnight either. But this is an area that, you know, Benjamin Cox would tell you if he's still on the line, this, that we need to do more, and we are focused on how to do more.
Yeah. Speaking of Benjamin Cox, he just texted me.
Okay.
All right. I'm just surrounded by media here. And I think this is for you, Chris. He says, not feds, ecological protection. And then the second text is mountain bikes.
Yeah, well, I know. And I know that they've gone in there and they've done some real major damage. And I know what you do, but it'd be nice to be able to have access to the, you know, if you're going to protect it, then you're going to just block up the whole, you know, forest.
Right. Well, we can take a look at that. I think, you know, there are areas, just to be clear, there are areas in the forest preserve that are very sensitive ecologically, and we don't encourage the public to. In fact, we have some restrictions on the public access because you would do more damage. Just even walking through, you do more damage than good. And in 68,000 acres, there are going to be spaces that we are more protective of and that we try to limit public access to. That may be one of them. I can certainly look further into it.
Yeah, well, I would appreciate that. And then the other thing is, you know, you're out there cutting down ash trees now.
Yes.
You know, while you're cutting down the ash tree, why not cut down some of the buckthorn that's right in front of it?
Yeah. So as you probably know, you know, emerald ash borer has done significant damage in this part of the country and come over from Michigan. And so we are actively cutting down ash trees.
Are you cutting down healthy or ones that have been infested?
Ones that are infested. Mm-hmm. The reality is, though, this whole area is infested, and it's a matter of time.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean,
it's unfortunate, but
yeah,
this is what's
we're going to lose a bunch of ash trees in this area.
But the ones that we are cutting down are the ones where the public frequents, so along pathways, parking lots, areas where if they fell would be a problem. Yeah. So the other ones are falling on their own.
Chris, thank you so much
for your contribution.
Have a great day.
You too.
I just got a text, and by the way, we're talking to Arnold Randall from, he's the chair of Chicago Wilderness. We already had that conversation.
Yes.
We're into Forest Preserve District of Cook County. He's the general superintendent. This is an interesting tweet. Would like to ask Mr. Randall about the current deer die-off.
Hmm.
It seems to be massive out here in the Northwest suburbs.
That's correct. We had, and I'm looking up the actual term for what it is because it's a very specific scientific term, but we had a number of things come together this summer that caused a large number of deer die-off, and it really had to do with a very mild winter last winter and then the very hot summer following it. And so you had a disease that is normally you find further south in the southern tip of Illinois or in Kentucky or places like that that impacts deer that we found here in the Midwest. And it was all the way from Iowa and a band that sort of ran from west to east across Illinois, and we were part of that. And we had a lot of deer that would die off through this this disease. And, you know, we tried to obviously clear them out as quickly as possible. But it's done now because we've had the temperatures have cooled. And so the mite or the bug that transmitted the disease to deer dies off when it gets to a certain temperature. So it's ended.
Is it likely to reoccur next year?
It depends on the
conditions,
weather, the conditions again.
Yeah.
Right. And so our ecologists and biologists were looking at that, and we were aware of it. We actually had some things posted on our website that can give you the specific details on what it is and how it spreads. And the reality is we have far more deer than frankly, that we'd like to have. This was a reflection of really different sort of climate issues, which, frankly, with climate change, this could be an issue in the future. We don't know.
So great question from my friends at the Seed Keeper Company. Very last question. We're going to go to Dave in Madison, Wisconsin. Always a pleasure to have you on, Dave.
Hey, thanks, Mike. You need 3 hours for your show.
I know
it's really
I do.
True.
Yeah.
You really do. It's a great show. And I just wanted to mention, I went down to Chicago, down in Bridgeview area a few weeks ago, and dropped my daughter and friend off at the soccer tournament, and went over to the preserve, which I had never been to. Is it on Austin Avenue?
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I was so impressed. It really had the changes. I grew up in Homewood. I've been going to the forest preserves all my life. Conkey Woods and, you know, all of them down there, Plum, Thorn Creek.
Yes.
And, you know, there was a lot of deterioration, and it was, you know, quite sad. And so the change that I've seen is just fantastic, and I just wanted to relay that to you.
I really appreciate that. There's a lot of people working really hard to improve what the preserves are, and that was happening before this administration took over, but we're certainly continuing that and trying to do more. But that's what it's about, is making it accessible to the public, that you have good experiences, that you feel safe, that you want to come there with your family, that you want to volunteer, that you want to protect these, you know, these resources that are, you know, they are endangered, and frankly, as the region continues to grow with population, these become more and more important to protect.
Well, and I, you know, one other thing, and this is related to your other role with Chicago Wilderness. You know, the thing I miss the most is the magazine.
Yes.
I loved the Chicago.
You know, a lot of people ask me about that. They write and they say, "What happened to the magazine? Why can't we?" And I assumed it's just an economics.
It was definitely an economic issue. They, you know, I think at the time the organization had to make some very tough choices, and they just frankly were not able to afford to maintain it. But that was including Tony Preikwinkle, my boss, said that's the thing that they love most about Chicago Wilderness, and it gave them great exposure to people. So we've been trying to figure out how do you replicate something like that.
So maybe
at least replicating the very explicit site descriptions that you'd have in there. I think that those, you know, I just devoured that magazine, and it gave you places to go, how to get there, how to enjoy it. So
it was a fabulous magazine, and they did a profile on me, and that's another reason I think that.
Well, we have that framed, Mike.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Dave.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for calling.
I got to let you go, but we have to have more conversations like this, and obviously you can tell that my listeners are very concerned about this
and knowledgeable.
So let's do it again. I want to thank you so much, Arnold Randall, General Superintendent for the Forest Preserve District of Cook County, also Chair of Chicago Wilderness. The Congress is this Thursday at UIC. Dennis?
I was going to say his wife did call in, and just to let you know, you're not in the doghouse. We talked it over. Garden City.
Okay. There we go.
That's right.
Not particularly close to Madison Heights.
On the side here.
Garden City. Garden City, Michigan. A shout out to Garden City, Michigan. All right. And don't be a stranger. Come on.
I'd love
to
do
have
it.
You, have you on again.
Thank you.
All right.